previously on Podcast Without Pretense.
Man, this next movie discussion is going to be grim.
Yeah, so the foam roller I was using wasn't made out of foam. It turned out it was like shaving foam, so it was kind of gross.
If you stack the trash cans too high, the automatic lifter thing, they just won't pick them in. Well, it doesn't work.
Great episode.
That was a good one.
Hi, I'm John.
Hello. Strickland. I'm Ayaz Akhtar.
And I'm Eric Sandin.
And together, two out of three of us can follow fucking instructions.
That is true.
I asked,
why do you say that, Jonathan?
I say that because today we were supposed to have a discussion about the tour de force film Avengers Grimm, an Asylum picture that was essentially going to be a kind of a fairy tale superhero story that two out of the three of us have watched. The third being Ayaz. So Ayaz, you said you had a reason why you were unable to watch the film. What was that reason?
Well, obviously the reason is poor planning, but normally I watch the shows I watch the movies on Tuesday night. But yesterday was Liz's birthday. So I did not account for this with the podcast. Oh. So instead of making her sit there silently while I watched Avengers Grimm, I took her out to dinner instead and all the other stuff. So that's where I screwed up. By being a decent boyfriend.
To be fair, that's a much better birthday than watching Avengers Grimm.
See, Eric, I disagree. I disagree. I think if you had forced Liz to sit there silently watching Avengers Grimm, at least until the point where you gave up and were allowing her to talk, it would have really brought into perspective how much better your relationship is compared to the movie. And that's the greatest gift of all.
Oh, yeah. So, folks, if you don't know what the hell we're talking about, we watch movies on this podcast and we don't have distractions on there. I don't just tell Liz to shut the fuck up when I'm watching a movie. That would, because we try not to have distractions. And even being smart mouth people around a movie, that's technically against the rules for this kind of game we play when it comes to watching movies without distraction. So it's not about me wanting dead silence. Although I do appreciate silence during first run movies, but Avengers Grimm, once you told me it was Asylum, I was like, oh shit, this is no good.
You're, I won't spoil things for you, but,
won't you?
I wish. No, I want you to watch this. You're not getting away from this one. It's an Asylum movie. We'll talk about it next week. It's all right because there is a film all three of us saw. And it's one that I think we probably saw with very few distractions because we all saw it in the movie theater. Oh. You two had seen it before I had, Inside Out.
Yes. Oh, right. The one that made me cry twice like a baby.
So I has cried twice and Eric got a bit weepy, right?
Oh, yeah.
I did not shed a tear.
Doesn't have a soul.
Eyes were bone dry through the whole thing.
So I have a question.
Okay, so are we going to spoil this movie before we start this? So people who have not seen it, because it's a first run movie. So
it's been in the theater for 3 weeks, though. So here's the thing: this movie has been out for 3 weeks. This discussion may very well contain spoilers. If you have not seen Inside Out and you wish to remain blissfully ignorant of the plot, or more importantly, you don't want your opinion to be swayed one way or the other from the discussion that may follow, you should probably stop watching right now.
Okay, now that they're gone.
So they're gone.
Yeah. Suckers.
God, screw our listeners. Jesus.
Both of them. I saw Inside Out and I did not cry. It didn't get me. What were you going to ask me, Ayaz, before the whole spoiler discussion? Or was that it?
I had a question.
What's your question, Eric?
My initial question was, have you ever moved anywhere while you were younger? Did you ever move from Atlanta?
No. Okay. Well, I mean, I when I was young, okay, until I was five, I lived in Gainesville, Georgia, which is a small city in northeast Georgia. And we did move, but it wasn't very far. I mean, I was five, so it wasn't like I had all these deep friendships.
Yeah, there's no, like, yeah, right.
Yeah, because I lived in a city. I didn't have any neighbors near me where I could form friendships with other kids. It was, even though it was a city, there were only a couple of other houses in that part of the city. The rest of it was like development of, you know, businesses and restaurants and stuff. And I was too young to wander around very much. So it's not like I went outside that often. We moved to a more rural part of Georgia, but it's kind of like a, you know, mix between suburb and rural. It's was called Oakwood, still is Oakwood, Georgia. It's a little more developed, a little more developed now than what it was before. It's not too far from where the Atlanta Hawks train over in Flowery Branch. But at any rate, moved when I was five, but that's, I don't have any, or I don't have very many pre 5 year old memories. Mm-hmm. So
it's like that. Yeah. Yeah, and I think that that, like, and not that that's what necessarily got me, but I think that that's part of what contributed to it was you know, having moved at, like, an age right. where, you know, you develop relationships. So I guess I have the right. same question, like, I think you have before. Did you move around, or
no,
were you
I was in New York, like, pretty much my whole life. I was born in Brooklyn. I moved to Queens, and I stayed there for a long time.
Really emotionally traumatic, just all by itself.
Well, I was all of 3 years old, so I wasn't exactly cognizant of what was going on. So I don't think I didn't have any like deep relationships at three. Go figure.
Yeah. So you were moving out of Brooklyn before that was cool.
I guess so.
It's not cool yet, so you're still pretty good. So the reason why Eric brings that up, in case you have not seen Inside Out and you don't give a shit about the plot, the young girl in the movie, most of the main characters we follow are the five primary emotions in this little girl's head, which appear to be five universal emotions for everybody, although in some cases the emotions all tend to be more alike than for other people. At any rate, she's got five primary emotions in her head, and when she is 12, I think 11.
Yeah, it's 12 or 13 or something like that.
Yeah, I think it's specifically 11 actually, and she turns 12 by the end of the movie. When she's 11, her family moves from where were they? Were they in? It was upper Midwest. Was it Wisconsin or Minnesota?
Minnesota. It was
that's right, because she's in Minnesota. Yeah. So right. She goes from Minnesota and moves to San Francisco. And so she's
also
trying
got
to
me
be
I'm moving to San Francisco. There was a lot of things happening that were just
very personal. Eric was an 11-year-old girl at one point. He was an aspiring hockey player.
He's got five
we'll
emotions
get to the rest
in
of that
his
later.
Head. Yeah, so the plot is that these five emotions are kind of shaping this was her name Riley, is that it?
Yeah, that's right.
Riley, they help shape her memories by influencing the emotions she feels when memories are being formed. And neat little idea, you know, charming idea. And she's moving to a new place, she's leaving friends behind, she doesn't know if she's going to be able to enjoy the same hobbies that she had before. And yet she's determined to try and stay positive, because that's kind of how she self-identifies. She identifies herself as a happy person. And then the internal struggle is that you've got Joy, who has been the dominant emotion for all of Riley's life, and Sadness, who is starting to, for reasons she can't explain, influence the memories that have already been formed and turn joyful memories into sad memories. And it's a commentary on, you know, emotional trauma and depression and all this kind of stuff. It gets a little heavy. None of it made me remotely weepy. I think largely because there are two reasons I gave when I posted about it. One is that by their very nature, the characters who are emotions embody a specific emotion, so they lack depth. Joy kind of has a secondary emotion, but it's mostly panic. But other than that, they're pretty one-dimensional. And then you've got The other part of it is that I've never been a preteen girl, and I'm not a parent. So that part of it didn't hit me at all either.
I mean, I think that's oversimplifying a bit to say that the only characters are the emotions themselves, and that
they're the primary characters.
I mean, they're the primary characters, but I would say that the reason that most people get emotional is not because of the emotions themselves. It's because of being able to empathize with what the girl is actually going through.
Yeah,
like not the fact that Joy's running around and all hell's breaking loose. I don't think anybody's sad about that.
I think I've seen stories involving children being uprooted that have affected me more than this one did. So I don't know where the failing was.
How did the short get to you at the
not
beginning?
At all. Not at all.
Like, come on. Uh-uh.
Nope.
So the short is called I think it's called Lava, right? It's about this singing volcano who just wants somebody to love, which is an interesting idea.
He wants someone to love.
He wants to love. Yeah.
Yes, of course. That's literally true. That's how the song goes. And he sings the song over and over again. And eventually if you don't want this part spoiled, stop watching. Stop listening.
I assume.
It's a lonely volcano. It's a lonely volcano who wants a volcano lover because he sees all these other creatures and things around him that are pairing up, and he wants to be able to pair up with something too. And then he dies thinking he's never going to have a chance, just as another volcano rises out of the ocean who has been listening to him for years. And so it looks like it's going to be a missed opportunity, like it's going to be a tragedy, but then he rises back out of the ocean. He reignites his lava, and we get a double volcano joining together at the end.
Yeah, see, now I thought since this is Pixar, I'm like, there's a shot. There's a very real shot once that volcano goes into the water and that other one comes up. This is over. Like, I'm like, this thing is over. This is the saddest short.
That's exactly what I was thinking too.
If it had been written by Brad Bird, that's exactly how it would have ended.
It was
Brad Bird or Joss Whedon. If either of them had written this cartoon, that's how it would have ended.
It was, but then there's always a little happy ending of that
too.
Okay.
Hate for this movie.
Why are you so like? Why on earth do you have such disdain for the short? Is my question.
It didn't connect with me. I felt the lyrics.
Right, you were never a volcano.
Look. There, Pixar has depicted love and loss in ways that have made me feel absolutely gutted. The first 10 minutes of Up, I can't watch without crying. I can't get through that. It is like an emotional punch to the sternum. This, however, I think part of it was that I found the song lyrics to be a little too trite. It didn't feel genuine to me. It felt a little... It reminded me, not tonally, but it reminded me of Bounden, the short that Pixar did that had the weird jackalope thing in it, that had a poem that was kind of a clunky poem that went along with the short. Both of those I felt just didn't hit the mark. So I didn't like the short. I liked Inside Out. I mean, it sounds like I didn't like it. I liked it. I just didn't get emotionally invested in it. I thought it was an entertaining film, but I would probably put it toward the bottom end of the Pixar movies. It's above Cars.
Okay. It's got to be above Cars. And it's definitely above Cars 2. Cars 2 is one of the worst movies I've ever seen. That's not true. Movies I've ever seen.
Yeah, I was going to say, we've seen some bad movies.
Yeah, I had to correct that.
I would put it above Cars and Cars 2. I'd put it above Monsters University, which was adorable but unnecessary. It didn't really teach us anything new about the characters ultimately, because it was a prequel, and that's a problem. I'd probably put it above this might be controversial considering that it tells you where I put this movie. I might put it above Toy Story 3.
How would
that be controversial?
Explain this one away that Inside Out is better than Toy Story 3.
Yeah, because Toy Story 3 is not good.
Explain that.
It's okay. I also agree with Jonathan on this one.
Yeah.
Oh, good. This is going to be great. I can't wait to be enlightened. I'm very curious why you guys think
Toy Story 3 is not very good. It just, again, it did not connect with me emotionally on the same level as the first Toy Story, and certainly not as much as Toy Story 2. Toy Story 2, actually, like, I think Toy Story, the first film, is a better movie, but I think Toy Story 2 was, with the story of Jesse, way more emotionally impactful. Because the story of abandonment was awful, and in a good way, like it really hits you emotionally. But Toy Story 3, again, was entertaining, but didn't really affect me emotionally. Inside Out's probably on the same level as WALL-E for me, I would guess. Maybe WALL-E and Ratatouille.
Wait, as far WALL-E as emotionally and Ratatouille affected. Are next to each other? In this world?
Well, if I'm talking about emotions, the way it's affected me emotionally, if I judge it that way, if I judge it by how much I enjoyed watching it, Ratatouille is probably a little above WALL-E. I think WALL-E was a great movie too. Like, you gotta remember, I like all the Pixar films I have seen. I haven't seen a Pixar film that I did not, like, I genuinely disliked. So this is a spectrum on the end of awesome to really frickin' awesome. So, keep that in mind. I'm not talking so Ratatouille was the rock and roll Frankenstein of Pixar. And that's not what I'm saying. But no, Inside Out for me is on that lower end. Like the upper end, Up is for as far as emotional impact, Up is at the top along with Toy Story and Toy Story 2. And probably Incredibles was way up there, actually. And Finding Nemo was way up there for me too.
That one
hit me way harder than I expected. You know what? Bug's Life, that would also be toward the bottom end as far as the emotional impact. Although it was a very entertaining film. So anyway, I enjoyed it. I liked the jokes. I loved seeing into everybody's head toward the end of the movie where you get to see what their emotions are like. My wife pointed out something that totally...
Oh, yeah, the end.
I totally didn't see.
For the end, yeah.
Yeah, at the end where you start jumping into other people's heads and you see their version of the emotions. Becca noticed something that I totally didn't pick up on, which was Riley, her emotions are represented by both male and female genders. Every other character, when you look in their heads, the genders are the same as that of the person. So in her dad's head, they're all sports guys. They're guys. In her mom's head, they're all women. And the boy who she runs into when she's playing the hockey game at the end, they're all awkward boy emotions. There are no other people who have a mix of genders in their emotional makeup, which is weird, right?
Well, see, I think that now that I'm thinking about it, it's probably because of puberty that changes the way these emotions are, I guess, not characterized, but effectively characterized, that you have a new filter.
Do you think when she hits puberty, anger and fear are going to have a sex change?
What rules govern the characterization of an emotion?
Anthropomorphism of emotions.
We don't know because the movie didn't explore that at all.
And who's to say that the red angry guy played by Lewis Black. isn't a female anyway?
Well, I mean, I'm just saying based upon the casting and the characterization.
That's true.
I don't mean to pigeonhole any emotions into any particular gender specification. I just pointed out something that my wife noticed and I didn't notice while I was watching it. But as I thought about it, I'm like, it is kind of weird that she's the only one who had this mix.
I thought about the puberty thing when we first went inside the dad and the mom's heads, because they were all men and all women. Like, that's, yeah. But I didn't even think about that in relation to the kid when she's playing hockey. But, yeah, I mean, I chalk it up to puberty. Also, I mean, it was mainly just, it would have been less interesting to watch, I guess, one gendered emotions for an hour and a half, you know, or 2 hours.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that it could have, they could have just as easily mixed up the genders in everyone else's head, too.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
And then that also would have gotten around that problem. And maybe they do have a reason that just wasn't addressed in the film. And maybe it is the puberty reason. And maybe if they ever do a sequel, I hope they don't. But if they ever do, maybe we will see that effect happen in the film. But I also just felt like, I don't know. I think I needed more time with Riley and less time with joy and sadness running around the memory banks, because a lot of what was going on with joy and sadness felt like we need to fill time. We need to create an obstacle between them and where they're going in order to justify the amount of time that it's going to take them to get back and to make things get as bad as they possibly can before they can get back into control. And also, I mean, to justify Joy's decision to have sadness take over. But that was the problem, was that I didn't identify enough with Riley. I think I needed more time with Riley to really get emotionally invested in her. I mean, the performances were all fine, and I think the script was good. It just didn't connect with me.
So the death of the pink imaginary friend elephant cotton candy thing, that didn't get you at all?
No, Ayaz, you want to know why? People forget shit. People forget shit, okay? He never lived. He was an imaginary friend. People forget their imaginary friends. There's nothing tragic about it. He never existed. Existed in her head.
Well, nothing in that movie actually existed. That's not the point, right?
You get even in the context of that movie, he never existed. I'm not talking some meta shit I believe Riley is real. No, in the context of the movie, he never existed. He's just a construct, just like all the other types of things that she imagines. People forget things as they get older, as they grow up. I don't see the forgetting of an imaginary friend to be particularly tragic.
But even at that, the character himself giving himself up for the girl is part of that as well. It's not necessarily the forgetting. We can think about that. That's the meta part that's happening here. But then you have the character actually dealing with it. I'm not trying to sway you to be emotional.
Well,
about
the way I figure it is that he was on his way out anyway. She's growing up. She's forgetting about her imaginary friend. I mean, he's already in that situation before the trouble has started. So to me,
so you're just sitting there going, he's screwed anyway. So
essentially it's like, okay, let's have an action film where we have a heroic character who has a terminal illness that is going to take this character's life probably within a foreseeable amount of time. Let's even be generous and call it a year. And that character decides to sacrifice him or herself to save other people. That's heroic. Sure. Character was going to die anyway. If they had not done that, you would have been like, you're kind of an asshole.
but I mean, if he hadn't died or given himself up in that way, then Joy would have never gone back out. I mean, that's like the other part of it.
Yeah.
Right.
But Eric, here's the thing about the movie. You know, Joy didn't
not
make it back.
Of course. I mean,
that's
yeah.
a foregone conclusion. I mean, I didn't feel like, oh gosh, the writers really backed themselves into a corner. There's no way to get Joy back now. It was one of those things where as I was watching it, I could figure out what was about to happen. Like I was like, all right, this is telegraphed. I understand exactly what's going to happen.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And I know what the movie wants me to do. The movie wants me to feel badly about this or to feel sadness for it. I don't, because he's a freaking imaginary friend. He's a memory that gets forgotten. That that's not tragic. Part of it is that I study a lot about memory. I've done a lot of shows about the science and of memory and the what we're learning as far as we get to memory. And so I don't romanticize it very much.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I also understand that. Like, I've done that, you know, as well. I don't write articles, but yeah, like I've read a lot about memory and how they're created and all of that stuff, especially like learning and development stuff. Ayaz is reconnecting. Oh, yeah. There he is. I understand. It makes sense.
Yeah, I ultimately, like I said, I think the movie is a good movie. It is an entertaining movie. It is by no means something that is bad or should be avoided. And I'm sure a lot of people will have that emotional connection to the movie, and there's nothing wrong with that either. It's just that it didn't happen for me, and I've explained the reasons why for me, but I don't expect that to be true for everybody. Certainly not. So,
Jonathan, you died.
I was disappointed that I didn't get more emotionally wrapped up in it, though, because I was actually, I like it when a story can draw me into the point where I'm really feeling emotions, which brings me to something that does destroy me emotionally. Did you guys see that The Iron Giant is getting a remastered release, theatrical release for 2 days this fall?
I saw it on your Facebook, and I've never seen this movie.
Really? Have you seen it, Eric? Seen it? Yeah.
Man, The Iron Giant.
When it first came out, I don't think I've watched it since, though, to be honest.
It's so good. You would love it. You would absolutely love it. You've got to see this movie when it comes out. It is an emotional gut punch as well. Very powerful relationship that's built in that movie. And it's fun. And it's funny and charming. And Brad Bird's the guy who wrote it. He's the same guy who did The Incredibles. And the dude knows how to write a story. So highly recommend it. If you get a chance, when it is re-released, there are two dates. I want to say it's like September 30th and October 4th or something like that, where it's going to be re-released. And then they're going to release the Blu-ray with the remastered edition, which includes a couple of scenes that were not in the theatrical release. But if you get a chance, go see it. I plan on checking it out when it hits the theater.
What I got to see again, and I want to rant a tiny bit while I'm intensely pixelated right now, I got to see Jurassic World again. And I know, Eric, you've seen it. I know we talked to Jonathan about this already. But upon seeing it the second time, it's way fucking worse than I thought it was the first time I saw it. The first time, I'm like, it's kind of fun. The second time, it's like, I was completely right. These characters are unlikable. There's all kinds of plot holes. It's just like,
holy shit. That was my trip back from the theater with my girlfriend to our house was pretty much me sitting there going, well, The characters had no story. There was nothing to them. They were just flat.
This is the problem that we have from watching terrible movies, is we get better and better about picking out things that make movies bad, and then we recognize the movies that we really want to like.
Yeah.
So what possessed you to see it a second time, Ayaz?
Oh, that would be Liz. She wanted to see it. She's like, hey, do you want to go see it? I'm like, no, but she wanted to go. So we went and saw it again. And we were in the nice, comfy theater, big leather seats, and it's got cup holders. It's really nice. The lady next to me, not Liz, this other person, she's actually not talking to the screen, but she's talking to the person she's with. Oh, now he's going to get his. Oh, that's a bad thing. Oh, is he going to get it? What the hell? Like, is there any reason this is necessary during the course of the movie? In a movie theater, I do want people to shut the fuck up, because I'm there to watch this horrible dreck in front of me in a large screen. And I'm just like, because I also know how long, like not how long the movie is, but the pacing at this point. When I knew that I still had an hour left, I'm like, oh my God, this movie drags. I forgot how much it drags, because the first time you see something, like, okay, well, maybe it's building to something. Maybe you're a little bit more hopeful. At least I am. I'm like, okay, this could get better. This could be fun, and it's just ridiculous. And here's the thing. So there's these two kids who are basically one of them is like a plot device. He's like, hey, he's a genius, right? He remembers everything. So that's how they can fix cars and do whatever.
And so then he's the equivalent of the young girl in the first film.
Essentially.
Yeah, kind of.
But this we don't is have, Unix. He's also I know this.
And here's the thing. So Liz is telling me after the movie, she goes, I think after watching a second time, I think those two characters are likable. I'm like, no, that's not the way the movie works. If they're not likable the first time you watch it, the more times you watch it, as it works. And I called up, I brought up as an explanation. It's like, when I watched that movie the first time, I was crying. And the last, any time I watched it after, those first 6 minutes get you every single time. It's a good story every single time. Each of these characters, including Doug the dog, all of these things are well done. I knew that the first time I saw it. It did not change because now I got to know them a little bit better. It was like these two. There's a totally unlikable boy, and there's one who's just kind of like, he's young, so he's excited, and he's supposed to give you that sense of wonder. But still, I have the same problems the first time I saw it. It just was so much slower than I remembered because it was painful. So I still don't recommend watching that unless you want to see the Indominus Rex, which you could see at Kmart, by the way. If you go to Kmart, they have the toys, so you can really see it. There's the dinosaur. Okay, that was fun.
I haven't seen that. I was thinking about going to see Terminator Genesis. Apparently, a lot of people are thinking about seeing it, but no one actually did it.
I was going to say, did anybody actually go through with it? Because
the box office for that movie was dreadful. Number one in the box office this last weekend was Inside Out, and it was the third week for Inside Out. Number two of the box office was Jurassic World, and it was the fourth week for Jurassic World. Then you had Terminator Genesis, which was opening weekend.
Oh, and it's a 26%. Ouch.
Yeah. Well, and most of the reviews I've seen have said that it is convoluted. The time travel makes very little sense. The characters are not interesting. The acting is terrible. It's just one of those things where heaps of criticism have been dumped on this film. I watched Red Letter Media's treatment of it, and that was pretty much, I was like, okay, I get a feeling. I know that I probably don't need to see this, just as I never saw part three or part four. So, yeah. And the more I talked to people about Jurassic World, the more it sounded to me like Jurassic World also ignores the sequels to a large extent, because I can't imagine a world where Tyrannosaurus Rex runs rampant in San Francisco to still embrace the idea of opening a dinosaur theme park.
Yeah.
Oh, that's no, right. Somebody on Twitter actually said this because of our last podcast, because I was like, at least call it something else. You know, take branding away from the Jurassic Park, you know, because it's a bad thing, you know. And whatever else around there. And Carl Abramson, who followed me on Twitter and actually put this up, said, there is a Titanic 2 being built by an Aussie billionaire. He also owned a resort covered in dinosaurs, animatronic. So I have to look this up. So apparently, he's okay with shitty branding stuff.
Yeah. well, you know, maybe all the computers at his amusement park run Microsoft Bob and you know, everyone's got a Razer phone, and
so he's a mining tycoon, and he wants to make an exact copy of the Titanic to journey across the Atlantic.
Why make an exact copy?
Clive Palmer is his name, and this is going to be great, I think. We will complete the journey. We will sail into New York on a ship they designed. So this is a great idea.
I wonder if he'll also... Maybe he'll demand that steerage be filled with Irish people.
Yeah. Didn't Asylum make Titanic 2? I believe they did.
They did. Yeah. They did, and it was hilarious. It was hilarious. Yeah. This thing was about to launch in 2016.
We didn't watch Titanic 2. We didn't watch that for this show, did we?
No.
I have no memory of watching Titanic 2, so I think Ayaz did that on his own.
I watched it,
oh,
too.
Oh, yeah, I totally watched it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad that...
With a title like that, how do you not watch it?
Oh, it was actually incredibly easy for me. It actually would have taken more effort to watch it, now that I think about it.
I'm trying to think who's in it. Was there a reason why I wanted to watch Titanic 2? It's probably some some old TV star that just
honestly,
is terrible.
I think Titanic 2 was like one of the first asylums that ended up on Netflix. Like, I think it was definitely like one of the first ones because it was a while ago.
Okay. It stars Bruce Davison, who I remember from television show Harry and the Hendersons. And he also he's an X-Men. I'm sure there's actually a really good role, but I don't know this. And Brooke Burns is the co-star. So it's pretty horrific. It's just a really lousy movie. I suggest it. It's so bad, it's fun. Okay?
Well, that's definitely different from most Asylum Pictures films.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about that more next week. So one other thing I thought would be interesting to chat about is how many weird, like, crises happened today.
Today? Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, you had United Airlines. United Airlines was forced to ground all its flights because of some sort of automation error, which usually means something on the back end of their computer systems. Then there was the New York Stock Exchange going offline for undisclosed reasons. Some sort of software problem. Wall Street Journal's website stopped working at one point today. A whole bunch of people in D.C. lost power for no discernible reason. So, yeah, sounds like the Upper East Coast is getting hit pretty hard.
Good times.
Atlanta's
fine.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
What are you going to say, Eric?
400. I don't know. Eric, do we still have you?
I'm here.
Yeah.
Eric is way here. Ayaz is only kind of sort of here. We're able to make out most of what you're saying through context and
right.
Pixelated facial expressions.
Oh, yeah.
Audio's okay.
At this point, I have no video back, so I'm just assuming I'm on at this point, and I still hope you guys can hear me. I'm sure the video looks awful. But with this whole mess, you guys know about the whole 400 gigabyte of data that was...
I do.
Leaked, was it?
That 400 gigs, the 400 gigs made me very excited because it's how I earned about 500 karma on Hacker News in a night. Because I was sitting there reading about, because the story is there was a security firm who made pretty much horrible spying software, right? And somebody got in there and literally just grabbed all of their source code, emails, tons of crap. So I think it was Sunday night. I'm sitting on Twitter and I see Jacob Applebaum post about it, and I see a couple of other people post about it. And then somebody posts a direct link to the torrent, and I'm like, well, let's see what this is up to. So I click on the torrent. The torrent is 5 megabytes, just the torrent file itself. And I'm like, oh, this is massive. And so I stop it and then finally get the reading on how large the actual download of it was. And it was 415 gigs. It was literally everything these guys had done. And it's been a fun story to follow so far, actually. this is my, I love this stuff. So
yeah, so these things have to be related, right?
I'm not entirely sure about that. I mean, really, from what we've seen, there aren't that many 0 days. So a 0 day, you guys know what that is. But for the listeners, it's a simple flaw that hasn't been released in the open that can't be fixed yet. There weren't that many that were found in the source code that were leaked out. There was a couple flash ones and things like that. And if somebody's taken down the New York Stock Exchange with a 0 day for flash, there's a bigger problem going on. but I mean, it is possible they're related, but I really don't think I honestly at this point don't think they are. Wow. That's my 2 cents on it.
Golly. Well, I mean, it's just one of those weird days where a ton of stuff happens. I don't think any of it is necessarily connected to each other. Some of it might be. Some of it may actually be, targeted cyber sabotage stuff. But systems break all the time. Like, it may be something as simple as United Airlines was moving in new code in their back end, and in the test environment it worked fine, but in implementation it actually ended up, you know, causing issues.
When you've been writing nothing but COBOL for 20 years or 40 years, it might cause issues when you move it back into production.
I say this because, you know, I'm married to somebody who works in this kind of field, so so I hear about this kind of stuff occasionally.
I mean, it is super interesting. You know, like, they're all relatively infrastructure driven stuff, so it's kind of weird that it all happened in one day. But then again, you know, we don't like the stock exchange thing has also been tried to be explained away by the drop in the market in China as well, and the stock exchange trying to control for that drop. So who knows?
Yeah. Meanwhile, you've got, you know, the situation in Greece that is poised to cause some serious problems in the European Union. And somehow this podcast got serious and on point.
I'll bring it back. So here's how this works. I was having a conversation about all of these events earlier today, and we came to the conclusion that pretty much this is going to end like an asylum movie. Okay, there's going to be like, we're going to be covered in snow. Obviously, that's the way this is going to end. And since we watch all these disaster movies together, disaster buddies. So there you go. So if you can watch the movies I do, or at least some of them, there's a chance you'll know how to survive. Maybe you can carve some wood, fix a church.
I think the important thing to remember is that if it ends like an asylum picture, you don't have to worry about all that snow falling because it'll just be digital anyway.
Right. And also, I can travel at great rates, super fast, like with a blink of an eye, because there's no explanation how I got from one place to the other. So it'll be great.
I look forward to you watching Avengers Grimm, because then you're going to learn about the most effective way to protect yourself from a barrage of bullets.
It was pretty good.
It's very inventive.
The other thing I wanted to say is, Jonathan, I listened to your podcast that you made.
Check for Traps?
I did, and I really enjoyed it. Like, I enjoyed it a lot, and I just found it really interesting.
Thank you.
You know, it was really good, and I hope you keep doing them.
Oh, I'm going to. Yeah, I have to figure out what the episodes leading up to the game are going to be. So
it's going
to
be hard,
podcast Eric's referring to. What's that?
Because you can't reveal much of the plot, right? Like,
I'll reveal more of the actual plot when we get to the point where the games are happening, and it's probably going to take me some time to edit play sessions down to podcast form, because there's just going to be a lot of extraneous conversation and jokes, that some of which I'll keep in, but some of which will probably be such an inside joke experience that it won't do the audience any favors to keep it. Plus all the basic interruptions and things that can happen in a game, I want to edit some of those out too. So I might end up doing like an episode before a play session goes live to kind of explain what the concept was, particularly in order to explain what I had intended versus what actually happens. Because as I said in the first episode, anticipate everything.
Sure. Yeah. No, that actually sounds pretty, pretty perfect. You know, I mean, it's fun for me because I've never, I've never actually played D&D before, but I've always been really excited about it, and I've never found anybody to play it with me, which is the hard part.
I'm sure you'll be able to if you wanted to look around. What to me the challenging thing was not just finding people to play with, but finding people who shared my same philosophy of what a role playing game is supposed to be like. Did I go into the difference between role players and rule players in that episode? I can't remember. I might have to listen to it again.
I don't think so. If you did, it was something that I glossed past when you were talking about it.
I'll do that on the next one then. It's so just for those who don't know, Check for Traps is my new podcast that's all about how I am designing and eventually I'll be implementing a Dungeons and Dragons campaign. I'll be running it as Dungeon Master. And the episodes mostly right now are focused on the steps I take in order to establish the world and do my end of the preparation before characters come into play. So things like, what are the basic political situations in this massive fantasy world that I'm using. I'm using the world of Greyhawk, which is pretty huge. And then also determining where will players be allowed to originate, because the world is so big, and I don't necessarily want someone to say, oh, I want to come from this incredibly remote part of the world right here, because justifying your travels from that remote part to a place where everybody else is a little challenging at times. So stuff like that, just logistics. And then, and also my philosophy on the game world in general, and the fact that it's going to have a kind of adventure comedy tone to it, with more adventure than comedy, but comedy will be a part of it. And anyway, the first episode went live, and I was really pleased with how it came out. Did some really basic edits to it.
The edits came out really well, and also I talked to the Zencast, the guy that you're using for that. I actually had a long Twitter conversation with him about Zencast and about like where he's going with it and what he's doing with it, and actually tossed him a bunch of ideas about features that he's probably going to implement. Actually,
that's cool. Yeah, he
seems like an awesome dude.
Yeah, he followed me on Twitter just as I was starting to sit there and say, "Well, what do I want to do? Where do I want to host this podcast? Because it's probably not going to go live as frequently as even Podcasts Without Pretense, which, as we know, updates not infrequently.
Yeah,
so I wanted to make sure that I didn't want to go someplace where I was going to be paying a certain amount and feel like I was wasting it. And I already do that for another podcast I do called Large Nerdron Collider, which I don't think is a waste at all. I enjoy doing it, and I feel fine about it. I just couldn't convince myself to do it a second time for this one. Sure. And then I was looking around, and he just happened to follow me on Twitter, and I saw the thing. I was like, well, heck, he's got a beta program. Let me contact him. And he brought me into the beta program, and it works. I mean, the tools are fine. They were great, yeah. Actually.
No, he. So, I saw that, like, when you posted the episode, I saw the URL, and I was like, "That's interesting. I haven't heard of that before." And like one of my programming projects that I like to do when I'm working on a language is to build an API for publishing podcasts, just as like a simple hello world, you know. Mm-hmm. And I just built one in like Python like a week ago, and so I was like, let's see how he did it. And I'm like poking around or whatever, and then he followed me on Twitter, and then we had like a couple hour conversation about different features of the software. So yeah, it seems like a really awesome dude.
He's been very helpful when I had one tiny issue, and it was a fairly minor, which was that when I was trying to classify the podcast, I was trying to classify it under games and hobbies because I felt that was the most appropriate. And for some reason, it was reverting back to art every time. So I think art was the first choice. And I think for some reason, it was just something in that menu. But he had it fixed in the RSS code so that it actually reflected that it's games and hobbies. So
yeah,
I submitted it to iTunes. Haven't heard back yet, so I don't know if it'll get approved or not, hopefully,
but either way,
will carry it. Yeah,
I encourage all of our listeners to listen to it. But it's really interesting to me because I play a ton of board games, and I love I like hearing about games. I'm not good at board games, but I own a lot of them and know all of the rules. So
I am also not good at board games, but I love doing. I love storytelling. So to me, a role-playing game is really just collaborative storytelling. And sure, the Dungeon Master has the most information about the story, but the players change the story. So that's one of the biggest points I try to make, is that if you want to be a successful Dungeon Master, you really have to respond to the way players are playing and not just force them down a specific pathway. It's gonna be fun to do more of those. I'm really looking forward to the point where we start doing play sessions. I can't wait to see what players come up with for characters. When I first ran this game when I was a teenager, because I haven't played since I was 18, when I first did this same basic campaign back when I was 18, one of my players rolled up a character who was a gnome swashbuckler. So he was like a 3 foot tall musketeer. And it was such a ridiculously dumb idea that I immediately was like, okay, you absolutely can play this character. And he acted like the debonair swashbuckler, but he's a tiny little dude. And that's what I'm kind of hoping for this campaign too, that people will feel free to embrace silly character concepts without going so overboard that it's, well, my guy's a barbarian and he uses a giant inflatable hammer as his weapon and he calls it Binky. I'm like, okay, there's got to be a limit, but but definitely whimsy is welcome. So and I plan on doing some other stuff. Like once I have the character guide finalized, I'll probably share that in some sort of like PDF format or something, so people who want to see what my players will receive, so that, you know, when they're building their characters, they can see exactly what the players get.
Yeah, you should. I can do it now, but I'm dead serious. When you actually start working on this stuff, I'd love to build a fun little site where people can play around with that kind of stuff. So
sure,
yeah, totally.
Yeah, it'd be awesome.
These are the hobbies that I enjoy.
So see, that's interesting because your hobby and my hobby can complement one another.
It's true. Yeah. So did we lose Ian?
Are you still there?
No, I'm here. I just have nothing to contribute to this particular discussion.
Okay.
I don't know if I have. I didn't know you were doing a new show. That's the first thing. I don't know how I missed it, which is very confusing. I mean, you must have put it on Twitter, right?
I did, but I mean, there's a lot of stuff on Twitter. I don't expect you to see all of it.
But I literally follow there's only 150 people, so I should have seen it, which is why I'm like,
there's only one episode that's live.
You should have, because he posted it and I posted about it today. So it's been posted by at least two of those 150.
What was I doing today? Yeah. I don't know what I've been doing.
And
today.
It's a really short episode too. It's a half hour long episode. So if you just want to listen to it to kind of be like, well, I'm kind of curious, what this is all about. You can listen to it, and if after 5 minutes you're like, nope, not for me, turn it off. It's not going to hurt my feelings.
I remember seeing the ads for Dungeons & Dragons on the back of comic books, and I was like, what is this? Because I never quite understood it from the back of the comic books. I'm like, then I go into the store, and there's this big box, and I'm like, what is this? And the people that are selling this stuff trying to explain to me, it's a role-playing game. And I'm like, what is this? I have no different idea. Like I'm like 8, right? And they're trying to explain this concept to me. I'm like, why? Why do you do this? I don't understand at all. I never got into role playing games, so I might try out the show and see if maybe at this age it'll click. I like trying out stuff yearly, and then see if like, okay, this is something that I like. Tomatoes. I hate tomatoes. I got a tomato every year for about 10 years until I finally liked one. I'm like, maybe I just haven't found the right one. So,
it also, like, the games are so dependent upon the people who play them. You can't, you could walk into one group and start playing with them and then go to a totally different group, and the experience will be, it can be significantly different. Like, the play style of the Dungeon Master and the players can be very, it could be a polar opposite experience. And so part of the challenge of playing the game and really knowing what it's all about is learning that it's not the same thing to everybody who plays it. Whereas if you play a board game with, codified rules, where the rules are not going to change, there aren't house rules, it's just going to be the same game no matter who plays it, the stuff that will determine will be the player strategy and the dice, that kind of stuff. You can be reasonably sure that one game playing experience is going to be similar to another one. Even if the outcome of the game is not, not known beforehand, the actual experience of playing is going to be very similar. That's not this case with role-playing games. So, it's a little complicated. And there's some people who, when I was saying role players or rule players, what I mean by that is there's some people who really like to take on the character that they have created. So in other words, they have rolled up a character. They've, assigned a class to that character. They know they're playing a human warrior, very simple character. but they have created a personality for that character, quirks, you know, likes and dislikes, that kind of stuff. And when they're playing as that character. They, you know, they, when they have a conversation with a different character or a non-player character, they're doing it as this creation they have made. So it's no longer the person holding a piece of paper. It is the embodiment of this warrior. Of course, we're all still just sitting around a table and talking about it, but they're talking as that character. Then there are others. The other far extreme are role players. They view their sheet, their character sheet, not as a character, but as a list of statistics that tells them how likely their character will be able to do something versus fail at something. And everything is calculated to the point where, you know, they're micromanaging their actions
to be
at their best advantage. That would be a rule player, someone who knows all the rules and are trying to use those rules to their advantage in order for this sheet of paper to do better. So, and there are people who get genuine satisfaction from that. There's nothing wrong with that. I just can't stand that style of play. So that's not going to be my campaign. Mine will be closer to role-playing without, you know, mandating everyone pick up a silly accent or something. They don't have to do that. But I definitely want to discourage the idea that they need to memorize the entire rule book and make sure. I don't want Hermione Granger in my game.
Jonathan?
Did I lose everyone?
Yeah, everybody was dead for a second there.
I didn't mean to bore you guys to, you know, comatose. Oh, Ayaz is definitely gone. I can see him talking, but I can't hear you, Ayaz.
Your video's back, though.
Yeah, your video looks great. Oh, there you are.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Okay, because I can't tell if you're serious at this point, because I can't even see
your video. No, your video really is much better.
Yeah.
Your audio is still kind of crappy.
Well, on that note, I was saying when I was moving my mouth, you heard nothing, that our technical difficulties seem to be pushing us to the future, I think. Maybe it's time to look into the future. Next week on Podcast Without Pretense.
Guys, this film discussion is going to be pretty grim.
I've been playing D&D for 6 weeks straight now, and I think I've gone crazy.
I looked up role-playing, and I tried it out, and I don't think I looked up the right thing.